Bobby Thompson up there swinging. He's had two out of three, a single or a double. Watson without too big of a lead at second, but he'll be running like the wind if Thompson hits one. Bracker throws. There's a long drive. I can't be, I believe. The Giants run the pellet. 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 Bobby Thompson hits into the very back of the left field stand. The Giants run the pellet, and they're going crazy. They're going crazy.
That's Bobby Thompson hitting the famous shot heard round the world when the New York Giants beat the Brooklyn Dodgers for the pennant in 1951. It's ironic that both teams would soon leave New York. I was about to turn nine the winter the Dodgers switched coasts and started playing in Los Angeles. I was a Cardinals fan in central Illinois listening to games out of St. Louis on a little transistor radio. The Cards were going to be good in just a couple of years, but Bob Gibson and Tim McCarver were just building up to the day when they would write their names in the history books. So the players I remember on my baseball cards were the Dodgers, Sandy Koufax, Duke Snider, Pee Wee Reese. Listening out in the middle of the country, it didn't matter to me so much where they played. They were just great players. But I can just imagine what it felt like to be from Brooklyn and lose them, the whole team, to a place a world away. Journalist Michael Shapiro focuses on the time just before they left in his book called The Last Good Season, Brooklyn, the Dodgers, and their final pennant race together. He told me he was too young to care when the Dodgers left town, but he's come to care a lot in the years since.
That's the thing that's remarkable about this, is that you meet people who are not only people who remember the Dodgers in Brooklyn, who went to Ebbets Field, who saw Duke Snider and Carl Erskine and Jackie Robinson and all those great players play, but people like myself who grew up in Brooklyn after the Dodgers left, who imagine a time when the Dodgers were in Brooklyn and it was as if every day was sunny and the Dodgers were always winning and Ebbets Field was always filled, and there's this incredible romanticized sense of what it was like then. I didn't see this as strongly until the summer of 2000 when the Brooklyn Cyclones came to Brooklyn and professional baseball returned to Brooklyn. The Cyclones set up a website to extract from people their sense of the meaning of the return of professional baseball to Brooklyn. And very quickly, they were just getting inundated with emails, and I went and started to look at them. And what was striking was the number of people who had never been to Ebbets Field, who were people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, who somehow felt this incredible feeling of, if only the Dodgers were still here, and this begins to make up for it. Wow. And yet, they never saw them.
Yeah. What was it? Was it just the time and the place? Is there something about that particular team? Because these are names that you conjure with in the history of baseball.
I think it's a combination of things. And I think that it is a very much, and I say this as a proud son of Brooklyn, it is very much a Brooklyn thing. This was not the same thing. I'm saying this at the risk of offending the New York Giant fans who feel very strongly about the Giants' departure the same year, the afterthought in all this. But the fact was is that when the Dodgers left, it really felt as if something profound had been taken away from Brooklyn. And what was interesting is that for decades afterwards, people were not necessarily able to put their finger on what it was. And in going back to that time and living a time when I was only 3 years old that summer, I was unaware of the world, unaware of baseball, and certainly unaware of the Dodgers. Nonetheless, to go back to that time, what you realized, what was so powerful then, and what people could not quite, there was no way to quantify this, was that what the Dodgers gave Brooklyn was a topic of conversation. And that is really the thing that was lost. The best articulation of the way urban life happens at its best comes from, not surprisingly, Jane Jacobs, who would look at streets and would see people outside talking, strangers talking, not in intimate ways, not the way friends talk, but people having a conversation. And what better way for 6 months of the year, day in, day out, to say, those bums, God, can you believe what they did last night? And what it gave people was a feeling of being connected to each other. And what it really meant is that you could live in a place like Brooklyn and never feel alone. And that ended.
Brooklyn has a reputation of being a working class place, especially compared to Manhattan. What role does that working class identity play in this Brooklyn Dodger pride?
The idea that you were there because it was very much a situation of which us against them. I mean, I can say this as a Brooklyn person, but you have to remember that Manhattan was always referred to as the city. You're going into the city, as if Brooklyn was not a part of the same thing. If you took the subway into the city or drove into the city, you were somehow going to, like, the Emerald City in The Wizard of Oz. That was this altogether very different kind of place, filled with sophisticated people who had much better manners and things like that, and where the restaurants were better. And the fact of the matter is that when my mother, who could care less about baseball, when I ask her about the 1955 season when the Dodgers, for the one and only time in their history, won the World Series, her reaction, I said, "Ma, what do you remember about that time?" She goes, "We won." Who's we? Who's we? Who's this we? And yet, yeah, the association was that we had finally won. We had finally beaten the guys from the city. Now, the fact was the Yankees played in the Bronx. No difference. They were the New York Yankees versus the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the Brooklyn Dodgers, though, the players who were on that team, because in some ways it sounds as though they fit this place. I mean, after
they
all,
did.
They had the first black player in the major leagues, Jackie Robinson. They had more than Jackie Robinson.
Campanella, Don Newcomb, Sandy Amrose. They were the Dodgers. That, it's interesting. For most of their history, the Dodgers have been a very bad team. And from 1947, when Jackie Robinson arrived, until 1957, when the Dodgers left, you could say that the Dodgers were most certainly the best team in the National League. They went to 5 World Series. And the second best team in baseball, unfortunately, because they kept on losing except for 1 year to the Yankees. But the team was a very interesting group of people. And to go back now and talk to men like Clem Levine and Carl Erskine and Roger Craig and Duke Snider about that team and about that time, there was a really strong sense that they were part of something remarkable. In many ways, they were like the borough in which they lived. There were tensions between them. There was a sense of common purpose. There was a sense of, you know, we're going to beat the Yankees one day. Yeah. And the fact that they kept on finishing second best to the Yankees only strengthened the bond between the Dodgers and Brooklyn. Had the Dodgers won 3, 4, 5 World Series, that bond would not have been the same. The fact that it was that profound sense of almost, which attached itself so profoundly to the Dodgers, made them a Brooklyn team in the most profound way.
Well, listen, we've talked about this team and why everybody in Brooklyn ought to be glad that they were there. What happened? Why did they leave? I mean, this is the story that people still rail about all these years later. Walter O'Malley took him away.
Imagine my sense of shame in being the Brooklyn person who has to come along and offer the exculpatory evidence for Walter O'Malley. Turns out that Walter O'Malley, the man who has been cursed for more than a generation now as the person who took the Dodgers out of Brooklyn and broke Brooklyn's heart, never wanted to leave. The man responsible for the Dodgers leaving Brooklyn was, in fact, Robert Moses. Robert Moses, who at the time was the most powerful public official in New York, although never elected to public office. Robert Moses was the commissioner of everything that went up or came down. All buildings, all demolition. I mean, he held any number of appointed positions.
Yeah, he's the one who's known mostly, though, for building the bridges, right?
Building the bridges, building the highways, building the housing projects, building Lincoln Center, building everything.
And he didn't care what he had to tear down in order to do it.
Not even a little bit. Walter O'Malley had a small ballpark with no parking, Ebbets Field. Now, today, of course, if Ebbets Field was still in existence, it would be like Wrigley Field. It would be a shrine that people would go to and be filled every night. But at that point, people didn't really want old anymore, and they certainly didn't want a ballpark that had aged badly as Ebbets Field had. So instead, what happened was O'Malley decided he wanted not only a new ballpark, but he wanted a new ballpark in Brooklyn. So he came to Robert Moses, and he said, "Look, I'm willing to build my own ballpark with my own money, and I'm also willing to buy the land. The problem is, unless you condemn the land under the powers given you by the federal government, I can't afford both. So what do you say? You condemn the land, I'll buy it on the cheap, I'll build my own ballpark, and everybody will be happy."
This sounds like something Moses ought to have just said, "Oh, sure, go."
You would think so. And initially he does. He said, "All right, I get it. I'm not a big baseball fan, but I kind of get it." This goes back, on, as it happens, until to 1953. And initially, Moses says, "All right, here's what I'll do. I will give you land in downtown Brooklyn, and you can build your ballpark there." And for a week or so, Walter O'Malley is delirious. And then Moses goes to look at the site at which he's going to give the Dodgers the land for their stadium. And he changes his mind. "I'm building a college there. It's going to be too cramped. Instead, I'll give you land in Bedford-Stuyvesant." For those who don't know, Bedford-Stuyvesant is this enormous ghetto neighborhood and was was a decaying neighborhood and became a very poor neighborhood through the 60s into the 70s, even well before then. O'Malley looked at this and he said, look, I'm not upgrading here. Now, one wants to think that Walter O'Malley could have been altruistic and said, you know what, I'm going to transform baseball by building a ballpark in a predominantly, overwhelmingly black neighborhood. Walter O'Malley was no saint on the issue of race. And what he really wanted to do is he wanted to be downtown. So he hemmed and he hawed, and Moses said, look, take it or leave it, buddy. I'm giving you land out here in essentially the middle of nowhere, not near any subway stations, not near any highways. Take it or leave it.
Well, here we are, half century later. Baseball is back in Brooklyn, although not Major League Baseball. It's professional baseball.
Yes.
I suppose that there are still in the hearts of some Brooklynites some people who say, well, maybe we could lure the Dodgers back home.
Oh, I think that the hunger for this, you see really clearly every time you go out to the Keyspan Park, which is where the Cyclones play out in Coney Island. I went the first couple of years. I would have gone this year, except the entire season, except for a few scattered bleacher seats, was sold out within 3 hours of tickets going on sale. Now, granted, it's a 7,500-seat stadium, but these games are always sold out. And you're talking about games against Oneonta. Okay, this is not games that, you know, makes the heart, you know, a flutter because of my, I've got to see how Oneonta plays. It is going to a baseball game in Brooklyn, and that in itself is a remarkable thing.
Michael Shapiro is the author of the book, The Last Good Season, Brooklyn, the Dodgers, and their final pennant race together.
3-2 pitch coming here from Eckersley. Gibson swings and a fly ball to deep right field. This is going to be a home run. Unbelievable. A home run for Gibson. And the Dodgers have won the game 5-4. I don't believe what I just saw. I don't believe what I just saw. One of the most remarkable finishes to any World Series game. A one-handed home run by Kurt Gibson. And I am stunned, Bill. I have seen a lot of dramatic finishes in a lot of sports, but this one might top almost every other one.